Good morning, everyone. I will call the Wednesday, February 6th meeting of the Senate Committee on Rules to order. Members, this is our very first meeting, and so though we have been on this committee before, four of us have previously served on the committee. We do have a new member, and we also have a new committee administrator. So I thought this morning we would start off by just introducing ourselves, and if you have any fun fact you want to share, go ahead, and then we'll move into an organizational session to adopt the committee rules. So I guess going by seniority, Senator Burdick, would you like to go first?
Thank you. I am Senator Ginny Burdick. I represent the people of Senate District 18 in Southwest Portland, a little bit of Northwest Portland, and Tigard. There are no fun facts about me. I'm a very serious person.
Senator Starr?
I am Senator Bruce Starr and have had the privilege of representing Western Washington County over the last 14 years, Senate District 15, live in Hillsborough. I am very pleased to have the opportunity to serve in this committee. I look forward to it. You want a fun fact?
It's up to you.
Yeah. I can't think of one.
Okay. Maybe it'll come to you later.
Maybe it will.
And I am Senator Diane Rosenbaum. I represent District 21, which is in Multnomah County and Clackamas County. And I have served on this committee since the beginning of the 2011 session and been honored to be the chair. But when I was in the House, I actually chaired the House Rules Committee in 2007. So had a little experience on elections and rules issues. And the fun fact about me, this isn't really very fun, but I have been voting in Oregon, I realized recently, since 1972. And that was the last year, I think, that you had to be 21 years old to vote. I discovered that when I was talking to my little sister, and I said, oh, that was my first election, Kathy. And she said, oh, that's funny, because that was her first election too, and she's younger than me. Well, that can't be right, but at any rate, it made me feel really old, because when you talk to kids in high school and you say you used to have to be 21 years old to vote, they look at you like you could also tell them about the Civil War from personal experience. Senator Ferrioli.
Senator Ted Ferrioli, District 30. All are part of 11 counties, 36,000 square miles. It begins in Marion County and Clackamas County and goes all the way over to the Idaho-Nevada border. And I was just looking at the newly redistricted maps to get a list of the cities that I represent. I think it's 36 cities that I represent. So I, too, like the chairman, voted for the first time in the latter part of the last century.
I'm Senator Lee Beyer, and I have the pleasure of representing the people of Central, Lane, and Linn counties, and have served on this committee both in the House and in the Senate as well.
Great.
Long time.
And Lori, did you want to self-introduce, or would you like me to introduce you?
Oh,
go ahead.
whatever works. Lori Brocker, a lawyer from Portland, and this is my fourth session, coming back for the session. My fun fact is that before I was a lawyer, I was a Lutheran pastor and a flight attendant for Northwest Airlines, which no longer exists, so that shows how old I am, too.
Great. And Mike. I don't think Mike has the mic, does he? No, so we'll just introduce Mike Riley, who has been the committee assistant for this committee for a long time and really knows how to keep us on time and on track, so we're really thrilled that Mike is still with us. And those of you who've been on the committee for a while know that Aaron Seiler is now staffing the House Rules Committee, but will be joining us from time to time when we do executive appointments to make sure that that process goes smoothly. So we are well taken care of here. So our first order of business then is to open an organizational meeting for the purpose of adopting committee rules. And Senator Ferrioli, I think we...
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I move that we adopt the committee rules dated February 6, 2013, as amended, with Committee Rule 19.
Thank you, Senator Ferrioli has moved to adopt committee rules dated February 6 of 2013 as amended with Committee Rule 19. And just so the members of the public and members of the committee will remember, we have a rule that other committees do not have, and that's number 19, which says that a work session on an executive appointment may be held no sooner than 21 days after the appointment was transmitted to the committee. That's a rule that we adopted last year. It's now referenced in the Senate rules, and it is part of our own operating procedures, and we've been operating that way for some time now. So that's the reason you have that one called out specifically. Is there any discussion on Senator Ferrioli's motion?
Madam Chair?
Senator Ferrioli.
I think it's just for those that might be tuning in on the internet or be curious about Senate Rule 19. It's just awfully difficult to do the appropriate amount of vetting that needs to be done when nominations are less than at least 21 days out. Members follow that list. They don't always get to it right away. And any concerns that would be expressed, we want to be expressed in a timely manner so that folks have a chance to respond to those concerns. So that's the reason for the 21-day rule. I think it's an excellent consideration that we give to our members to give them time to consider confirmation of the governor's appointments.
Thank you for those great comments. Senator Ferrioli, any further discussion? Any objection to the motion? Seeing none, the motion carries, and our committee rules are adopted, and we are in business. So I'll close the organizational meeting and open an informational meeting. And we have with us today our Secretary of State, Kate Brown, and the head of the Elections Division, Steve Trout, I believe, is here with her. And they are here to give us an overview on the recently completed election and then some things that are contained in a report on voter registration and a little bit of a brief overview of some possible upcoming legislation in this committee.
Great.
So, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Mr. Vice Chair. For the record, I'm Kate Brown, currently serving as Oregon Secretary of State, and really appreciate the opportunity to be here with you this morning to give you a brief recap on the 2012 election cycle, as well as give you some highlights from our agenda for the 2013 legislative session. My priorities have been and will continue to be working to ensure the integrity of our elections process, continuing to engage eligible Oregonians in voting, and continuing the work we've done, and I think, Madam Chair, you were very much a part of, to ensure integrity in Oregon's initiative process. So first, let me give you a brief recap of the 2012 election cycle. I think it's fair to say that vote by mail continues to be one of the primary reasons why Oregon has one of the highest voter turnouts amongst registered voters in the nation. In our May primary, we had a turnout rate of 39%. Before you go home and cry in your tears about that low rate, to give you a comparative, Nebraska had a primary on that same exact day. They had a very hotly contested Republican primary for the U.S. Senate, and their turnout was 26%. In November, our turnout rate was 82.8%. I believe one of the only states that had a higher turnout rate than us was Wyoming. Their turnout rate was 104%. That's because they allow same-day voter registration. And most of the states in the top 10 for voter turnout have same-day voter registration. As you know, we do not. And I'll just wanted to share with you as well, Washington turnout numbers. Washington now is the second state in the nation to have vote by mail. Their turnout numbers were very similar to ours. In their August primary, it was 48%, and November was 81.25%. So we still beat Washington, which is great. Where we've really lagged behind the rest of the nation is in our registration, and a number of our organizations have worked really hard to engage eligible Oregonians to register for the election cycle. Just to give you some numbers, in the May primary, we had 69% of eligible Oregonians registered. By the November general election, we had 75%. A lot of that work can be attributed to efforts of organizations like the Oregon Student Association. My understanding is they registered about 50,000 students this election cycle, which is pretty amazing. We also have some wonderful new tools to assist with voter registration. You gave us the authority to implement our online voter registration, which we were able to get up and running in March of 2010. Since the system's been up and running, we've had 240,000 Oregonians use the system to either update, register, change their party affiliation. So we're very excited about that tool. Another area of focus for me has been both on students and another population, newly naturalized citizens. Just share a new project that we started with the Immigration Service. We've partnered with the USCIS, Oregon Voice, and a number of the immigrant advocacy groups to educate and engage newly naturalized citizens at the time of the naturalization ceremony. This project's been up and running since February. The results are astounding. Since February, we've registered 90% of the newly naturalized citizens, and we know that their voter turnout rate was roughly in the neighborhood of 68%, which is really, really terrific. I will tell you that the Secretary of State of Nevada, Ross Miller, he's the current National Association of Secretaries of State president. He is going to be coming in March to see the New American Voters Project. We'd love to have you join us if it fits into your very, very busy schedules. And Secretary Miller is also available to testify if you'd like to hear from him as well. So we're real excited about having him come visit. One of the other pilots I just wanted to share with you a little bit about is our tablet technology. We piloted the use of iPad technology during the special election for the first congressional district in November of 2011 and January of 2012 for voters with disabilities. We were the first jurisdiction, we believe in the United States, but also we believe in the world, to use this technology to assist voters with disabilities. We were able to expand the use of this technology during the 2012 election cycle. All of our county elections offices have, I believe, multiple tablets, including iPad and some of the Mac, Microsoft versions as well. This has been a very successful project. It is that same software that we use to deliver our ballots to military and overseas voters. Our turnout for our military and overseas voters was really high this year. We're very pleased. It was a record 71.8%, and 19% of those ballots were returned via email. So we're really excited about this technology. This particular tablet technology project has been nominated for a NAS award, and we're one of the four final nominees, so we're pretty excited to be presenting to the NAS conference in July. So that's some of the good news. On the more difficult side, I think you are all aware that we had an incidence of ballot tampering in Clackamas County. This is the first time we've seen a case like this that we're aware of in the last 20 years. Absolutely unacceptable and a violation of the public trust. What I was pleased about is both the county clerk and our Department of Justice took immediate action. The accused was indicted within a four-week period. The case is still pending. However, the Department of Justice is keeping us closely apprised. It is my commitment to you that I will work to ensure that this woman is prosecuted to the fullest extent of Oregon law. Another case which I wanted you to be aware of, on January 23rd, a Bend man was convicted of trying to buy a ballot on Craigslist. He claimed to the judge that he posted the ad to stir up the public and that his speech was protected by the First Amendment. A Deschutes County judge rejected this argument and convicted him of one count of unlawfully offering to purchase a ballot for money, and I believe that's a Class A misdemeanor. Some folks might argue that this was a minor case and not worth prosecuting. I have to tell you, I wholeheartedly disagree. Every voting fraud case is worth prosecuting because it sends a really strong message to potential wrongdoers as well as to the public. The voting system, the integrity of the voting system, is my top priority as your Secretary of State. I also wanted to add the county clerks are here in Salem today with their association, and I would really encourage you. I know a number of you have already been to tour your county clerk's offices, but I'd really encourage you to do that when there's an election taking place. Our county clerks are extremely hardworking, very dedicated, and very committed to doing their jobs and continuing to ensure the integrity of Oregon's elections process. So that's, I guess, a not-so-brief recap of 2012. As we look toward 2013, the three areas of focus that I will have include greater transparency in the campaign finance system, engaging more Oregonians, and in continuing to ensure the integrity of our initiative process. I did want to note, I believe you all have received our National Voter Registration State Compliance Council report. This is a report that we just completed and is the result of legislation that you all passed last session. I believe it was House Bill 2880, but don't quote me on that. Steve chaired the compliance task force, and we've put together the report. The goal of the report is to continue to make it easier for eligible Oregonians to register to vote in Oregon. I think it's fair to say that our work is not quite done, but we certainly made some really great progress. I will continue to collaborate with Department of Motor Vehicles to enable eligible Oregonians to apply for or renew their driver's licenses to be automatically registered to vote unless they decline. And I also am submitting House Bill 2198, which will direct the NVRA agencies, the National Voter Registration Act agencies, including a Department of Human Services and the Oregon Health Authority, to share their change of address information with elections instead of requiring clients to fill out an entirely new voter registration form. I believe that these efforts will reduce the barriers that Oregonians face in voter registration. We will be moving forward with a new policy with regards to signatures on ballots in a way that ensures uniformity and accessibility for voters. You might recall, I don't know if any of you have been in this situation, I personally have, and I know that the former chair of the Republican Party personally has, either failed to sign a ballot or the signature didn't match. Currently, our policy is that you have 10 days to cure or come in and sign your ballot. After some discussions with the county clerks and other folks, we are moving forward on legislation to change that policy. When ballots are returned or unsigned or when the signature doesn't match or set aside, what we would like to do moving forward is allow county clerks 7 days to mail notices to those voters. And then after the 7 days, that list would become public so that parties and candidates would have the ability to contact those voters and encourage them, shall we say, to get into the elections office and either get their ballot signed or ensure that the signature on the ballot was theirs. Lastly, I just wanted to mention our work in the initiative process to continue to crack down on fraud and abuse. We have asked for the statutory authority to enable paid signature gatherers to get whistleblower protection, and we will be asking that the law be changed to require that chief petitioners actually do the criminal background checks. Lest you think that there is no concerns about the integrity of the initiative process, my office this past year fined a chief petitioner $65,000 for their failure to comply with Oregon's pay per signature laws. This case is now pending in front of an administrative law judge, and hopefully will be decided sometime in the next couple of months or years. So in closing, I just want to say thank you for your great work and for your service. We really appreciate the opportunity to be here today. I think I neglected to mention on my right, literally and figuratively, is my elections director, Steve Trout, and we're happy to answer any questions or address any concerns you might have. Thank you.
Great. Well, you covered a lot of territory quite quickly, and I'm sure that there will be some questions. And as far as some of these specific bills, some are in the possession of this committee, some are not. And so as we move forward, we'll definitely be taking testimony. I know that a lot of people will be interested in some of these proposals. So at this point, I'll open it up to members of the committee for any questions. No questions. Senator Burdick.
Could you elaborate on the background check requirement? I'm unfamiliar. If you put that responsibility on chief petitioners, would they have to check the backgrounds of anybody who is collecting signatures?
Thank you, Madam Chair, Senator Burdick. We initiated criminal background checks for paid signature gatherers. I believe it was either in the 2007 legislation, fondly known as IRMA, or the 2009 legislation. And the purpose of this was to make sure that folks that have criminal histories of either fraud, forgery, or ID theft are not able to be paid signature gatherers. So we found, frankly, when the time becomes short, a number of the firms end up having us do the criminal background checks, and we basically got overwhelmed by the number of criminal background checks for paid signature gatherers. So we'd like to enable the chief petitioners to do that themselves.
And it's just those crimes that follow up.
Madam Chair, Senator Burdick, yes.
Thank you.
Okay, Senator Farioli.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, Madam Chair. I think the Oregonians are well served by the Secretary's concern about voter integrity. And it's the issue that I hear all the time from folks who don't see enough assurances that the system has integrity. So I'd like to give our Secretary of State an opportunity to assert a few things that I think will help folks understand her concerns about voter integrity are shared with others. What's the penalty for fraudulent or an attempt to register fraudulently?
Madam Chair, Mr. Vice Chair, the penalty for voter fraud is essentially a Class C felony. It's subject to 5 years in prison. It is a $125,000 fine, and it is a deportable offense. So, frankly, that is one of the biggest deterrents to voter fraud, is the severity of the penalty. And as Ben, since I was elected Secretary of State, we've had two convictions for voter fraud in the state of Oregon.
Follow up, Madam Chair.
Yes, go ahead.
There are anecdotal stories of folks soliciting others to register fraudulently. How do we inform potential registrants of those consequences for attempting to register unlawfully? Is it printed in multiple languages on the registration form? How do people get the information that we're really serious about voter integrity?
Madam Chair, Senator Farioli, I think the way we deliver the message to Oregonians and, frankly, folks across the state is that we are extremely serious about ensuring the integrity of our voter registration rolls. And we do that by making sure we immediately investigate every single complaint that we get and, when appropriate, turn those cases over to the Department of Justice. And that's why I relayed that story to you about the Ben case, that we take take all of these cases very seriously. The integrity of our centralized voter registration database is extremely important. We have a number of measures to ensure its accuracy. For example, a couple of years ago, and we're continuing to do similar database matching projects, we compared the database of the Clark County and Washington voter registration rolls with three of the Oregon counties, Washington, Clackamas, and Multnomah. We found less than 1,000 people who were registered in both places. The person who happened to vote in both places got a knock on his door from the Washington Department of Justice. So that is one way. The other way we do is both on our voter registration forms and, most importantly, on our online voter registration system, the first information that you need to provide and verify and swear to is that you are a citizen of the United States, that you are a resident of the state of Oregon, and that you are at least 17 years old. We allow 17-year-olds to register to vote in Oregon. We don't send them a ballot. And that failure to do so is the Class C felony. So those are some of the measures that we use. We are continuing to work to ensure the integrity of both our database and the process. Steve, do you want to add anything else to that?
Thank you, Madam Chair, Senator Farioli. I think that as we continue to use technology to help us match, we're currently, as the Secretary mentioned, we've done matches with the state of Washington for a number of years, and with Alaska for the last couple of years. We're now a part of a team that has connected with 21 different states, so that we can detect if someone is registered in any of those other states, and to be able to go forward. We continue to try to add more states to that. Frankly, most states aren't as advanced and as far along as we are in maintaining their voter registration databases and using technology, and so that's part of the challenge in getting more states on board. But we continue to look for those tools to match with other states so that we can go forward and make sure that our rolls are clean and that the public can have confidence that we're doing everything in our ability to make sure that only those people that are validly registered are voting and that they're only registered once. And I think something else that that I hear is our concerns that, well, how do we know that people aren't registered in both Washington County and Multnomah County or in multiple counties? And since 2006, when we moved to a centralized, single, uniform statewide voter registration database, that took away those issues. So if someone is registered in one county and moves to another county, we're going to know that, and that registration is going to be moved from the county that they previously lived in to the new one. And so we have checks because we have a statewide database that prevent people from being registered in multiple counties.
Madam Chair, Senator Farioli, two other things I would add is that we really encourage Oregonians who have concerns about a ballot issue or someone who's registered who might not be to call us. Our phone number is 503-986-1518. We investigate all of these complaints. The voter registration database is a public record, so it's available for folks to see. And I really would encourage people to call us. The last thing I might add, as a result, I believe, of our last meeting with the National Association of Secretaries of State, I do believe that we as secretaries have access to the Federal Homeland Security database to ensure proof of citizenship for registered folks that there are questions about. So we have ability to verify that information. And Committee Administrator, I can get you the details. I'm not sure that I need to get the right database that I can get that information to you. So.
Madam Chair, I have a slew of other questions, but I don't want to take the committee's time with most of them. I think that people get the flavor that there's a lot of energy being spent on voter integrity. But I do have one more question.
Sure.
One of the things that attends the frenzy around an election process, particularly as we get closer to the ending of the election period, are the picking up and holding of votes by third parties, where people will go to the online searchable database that shows who's voted and who hasn't voted and fan out over a district and solicit ballots, you know, knock on the door and say, you know, you haven't voted yet. I'm here to pick your ballot up. It can almost be coercive, Madam Chair. But folks turn, which is amazing to me, turn a voted ballot over to a total stranger. And the ballot doesn't go directly to the elections office. It might sit in somebody's repository where all the other collected ballots go, sometimes for days, sometimes for longer than days. And all of a sudden, at the last moment, these ballots show up at the elections office, leading people to conclude that there's, you know, something funny going on, because how could so many ballots show up from maybe one or two particular sources who are organized to go get ballots? And it just raises the suspicion that these are somehow being manufactured rather than actually being voted. But, you know, can you help me understand how we can allay the concerns of people when apparently it's perfectly legal to go out, solicit ballots, voted ballots, warehouse them, and then run them in, you know, like a football across the goal line at the last minute? And to some people, it seems like the requisite number of ballots always seem to appear on the last day. So can you help me understand how that is not a threat to voter integrity?
Madam Chair, Senator Farrioli, I can respond to a lot of your concerns. It would take me a long time to do that, but let me respond briefly. Number one, we really encourage Oregonians to use our official Dropbox sites that have particular security measures around them and standards for picking up those particular ballots. I'm not sure I should let the U.S. Postal Service know this, but more than 50% of Oregonians are now using Dropbox sites to get their ballots in. We do have legislation in to require third-party folks who are picking up ballots to get those ballots in within 48 hours of the time they pick up the ballot. Is that House legislation or is it Senate? Do you remember? Senate legislation. And then I think the other piece, and this is in regards to the general integrity of those ballots, and I have to tell you, I think Multnomah County is one of the worst offenders in terms of ballots being dropped on the last day, anywhere from 80,000 to 100,000 ballots on election day. But every single one of those ballots, we verify those signatures. And so regardless if it's 100,000 ballots on election day or 1 million ballots on election day, the county clerks verify every signature, and all of those ballots are barcoded into the system. So regardless of how they come in and the timing of they come in, as long as they're in before 8 p.m. on election day, our elections process works to continue to ensure the integrity of the balloting.
Madam Chair, just an observation, and then I'm finished.
This is it. Okay.
Okay.
Great. I've got a few questions, so don't feel bad.
All right. I would just suggest that if folks want to go pick up ballots, they ought to meet the same standards as those who are paid signature gatherers. They need to be registered with somebody. They need to have a background check. You know, if you're really going to discourage the process of warehousing 100,000 ballots somewhere, to dash them in, that doesn't help the system in any sense that I can think of. It overwhelms the elections officials. It looks fishy. And to me, I think that there is a coercive element in knocking on somebody's door and demanding a ballot. I mean, it isn't necessarily an invited contact. It's a solicitation that may even be threatening to some people. So I'd like to discourage the practice in any way possible, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, Mr. Vice Chair, if you've been near the Multnomah County Elections Office on Election Day, you know that those 100,000 ballots are not coming in all one fell swoop. They're coming in one at a time, car by car and person by person. So, I mean, some of them certainly are coming in batches, but those 100,000 come in individually as well. So I'm going to let Mr. Trout talk to you about the other issue.
So, Madam Chair, Senator Farioli, I appreciate that, and I committed to you last session that we would, you know, work on something with respect to these third parties picking them up, and so that's why we have this legislation. Current law requires anyone out collecting a ballot to have a sign with specific language saying this is not an official drop box. And I was really impressed this last cycle. I had a number of calls from police departments. People had called and said, hey, these people are out, you know, canvassing my neighborhood, and the police departments had actually done training on what the rules were and what that sign had to be. I was glad to hear that, and I think we may need to do more training in that area. But you know, that is a requirement. When anybody calls our office, we say, you know, kind of like you're saying, trust the official drop boxes or the mailbox. If you give it to an unofficial drop box or a person out collecting ballots, you're assuming the risk. But I think having a limitation on how quickly they need to return ballots will be helpful. But be happy to talk to you or your staff about any other issues that we might be able to tighten this up.
Madam Chairman, thank you so much for your indulgence.
Yes,
I would say just 6 hours, not 48 hours. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yeah. And Lori has just pointed out to me that bill, which shortens the time, which I think is currently you have 7 days once you have legitimately collected a ballot to turn it in. Is that your recollection? I think it shortens it from a week to 48 hours.
So, Madam Chair, I know that this significantly shortens that time period. My recollection is there is no time limit on when they have to be returned. Currently, there is for voter registration cards,
but not for ballots.
And so I think that's you know, I think that's an important change that we need to make, and that's why it's in the bill.
So I had a couple of questions along the same lines as Senator Farioli, and so my experience is that, and this is obviously anecdotal, and we'll get plenty of time for testimony from the county clerks and others who deal with this every day, but certainly interest in every election escalates the closer we get to the election. Some of that a function of advertising, some of it a function of just people are paying more attention. But one of the things that I've repeatedly encountered in various parts of the state is that there never do seem to be enough physical places where people can actually take their ballots. I think that's actually more of a problem in rural areas than it is in urban areas, but it's a problem in urban areas too, and I've never really understood what the process is for a drop site to become a drop site. I've talked to, you know, like commercial vendors who've said, I'd love to be a drop site. I'd love to sell people hamburgers and have them vote here too, just like they do over in that other neighborhood. How do I go about getting to do that? So can you enlighten us a little on that?
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. The counties currently have a requirement to provide a certain number of drop sites based on the population is really the guidance there, and then they select those sites. You know, part of the balance here is the security of those sites. If they're within, you know, offices or libraries, or if they're standalone like outdoor mailboxes, you know, there's security concerns that surround that as well, not only with the drop boxes as they stand, but also on who's picking them up and how often they're picked up, and so it's really driven by logistics. But that's one of the things now that we see, that a majority of our voters are returning ballots to drop sites, and also as we anticipate changes in mail delivery times, if the U.S. Postal Service continues on their path of closing down four out of the five regional sorting facilities here in the state. That's actually where it's on the agenda for us to talk about at the clerk's conference later today, to see what we need to do and to evaluate how best that we serve these voters. We're still processing some of the minor detailed data from the November election to see if we can monitor where ballots are being delivered, and to try to do some more data analysis so that our decisions are based on data of where the voters are dropping ballots and where they live, to help drive those decisions as far as where the drop boxes would be. And then, a lot of those considerations are they going to be in a in a government office, and what are the security going to be there, versus are they going to be standalone outside outside the restaurant where you're going to have your burgers and shake, but they need to be secure and permanently affixed, and there's significant cost to making sure that those boxes are secure in a way that people couldn't come and take the bolts out and then just run away with the drop box. So there are multiple considerations to be had, but it's something that we continue to look at and continue to look at ways that we can serve our voters. And honestly, in some of the counties, it's there's different issues to to ponder. In Senator Farioli's district, there's, I think you said, I forgot now how many thousand square miles to cover. 36,000 square miles to cover in those counties, and so where do you determine to put those drop boxes that allows for security and also cost effectiveness to go and retrieve those versus in more urban areas that may need fewer boxes, or they have more access to a post office or mailbox there.
So it sounds like it is a current topic of conversation with the counties as to whether we need to find. I mean, I just am, and I never really have bothered to research it. Are there any existing statewide statutes that govern drop sites?
Madam Chair, it is both regulation and statute. I will tell you, I had questions during the 2012 election cycle, even in the Portland area, about the lack of drop box sites. It is as Steve mentioned, it is a cost issue for the counties. It is a staffing issue and is a location issue. I do think we need to do a better job. We do have Help America Vote Act dollars available to make this happen. I know, for example, we worked over the last couple of years to try and get drop boxes on all of the reservations in Oregon, but we need to continue to do a better job, and it will continue to be more and more of a challenge as we see the numbers of people, instead of using the mail, going to use the drop box. And as Steve mentioned, we have more than 50% of Oregonians using official drop box sites or not using the mail system.
So I think we can certainly have further consideration of this topic as we move forward, and I will just ask one more question. I've got a few, but as Senator Farioli pointed out, we could sit here all morning and we don't have that much time. I wanted to ask you a little bit more about the post office and vote by mail issue, as far as you alluded to the closures of the sorting centers, which obviously have been proposed and delayed, it seems like, repeatedly. So if you could tell us what the status of that currently is, and then also the postage issue itself, which I know is a bit of a thorny issue. If you could just comment on the current status of ballots being received and counted that did not have stamps, whether because stamps fell off or nobody put them on in the first place.
Sure. Madam Chair, in terms of our partnership, and that's how we look at it, is with the United States Postal Service, our local partners have really stepped up to the plate to coordinate and make sure that both in going out, for example, voters' pamphlets and ballots get out in a timely manner and get delivered to folks. Since the 2008 election cycle, we've partnered to ensure that there is a phone tree, so to speak, with the county clerks. So if there are any issues identified, for example, in a particular county where ballots didn't get delivered on a timely manner, the U.S. Postal Service knows about it immediately, and we're able to get what needs to happen in that particular area. So we have a very close working relationship with our local partners at the Postal Service. It's my understanding that the closures, The anticipated regional closures are now on hold, but we have worked with our regional partners to make sure that if and when that does happen, that will not delay both outgoing mail service in terms of the vote-by-mail process, as well as incoming mail as well. In terms of postage, Oregon law requires that folks put up a stamp on their ballot. I do not believe that a stamp should be a barrier to people participating in our process. I think it makes sense to have us move forward on something, given the fact that the U.S. Postal Service is looking at regulations right now to make us require certain amounts of postage stamps based on the weight of the envelope. I think we need to take a look at this issue. Look forward to working with you on that. Steve, do you have anything you want to add on the post? Okay.
Okay. Any other questions for these good folks? I'm sure we'll have plenty of... Yes, Senator Starr.
I just want to flag an issue that potentially is one that we'll have to deal with, and that's the issue of how we do the driver's license and voter registration piece, especially if there's a change in state law where we provide driving privilege cards. So I'm sure that that's not something that's eluded your thinking, but it is something that we're gonna have to figure out how to manage so that we ensure that those that are a registered voter actually qualified to vote.
Madam Chair, Senator Starr, we're working very closely with Department of Motor Vehicles. We do not want to register people who are here legally but are not citizens because of the aforementioned penalties. So we will be working very closely with Department of Motor Vehicles to ensure that that's not the case.
Okay, I don't see any other questions for you this morning, so we really appreciate you taking the time to come. We know that we'll be seeing you again. Yes, Senator Ferriola.
One unrelated question to voting. It has to do with certification of elections.
Okay.
In a little town in eastern Oregon. I just wondered if the Secretary has any observations about...
Madam Chair, Senator Ferrioli, we've taken care of Antelope. I think we're still working on Greenhorn. Am I right on that one? Yeah.
Huge concerns of mine, Madam Chair. Thank you very much.
Okay. Well taken. Okay, thank you again for being here, and don't be strangers.
Thank you. Madam Chair, I'm sure you won't let us be strangers, and I appreciate that. Thank you.
So I think that completes our agenda for today. I'll just mention to committee members that we are currently scheduled to meet every Wednesday at 8 o'clock. I certainly will take your druthers on this. My preference would be to not start at 8 o'clock unless we have a full agenda that would require us to use up the allotted time. So I will attempt to start at 8:30, and I really appreciate people showing up on time so that we can do that. And then also just to mention to you that I know members are using their computers, which is great, and we have this OLIS system, which is great. Currently, I think that what we're doing is providing paper copies to you at the dais in addition to posting documents in OLIS, because the redundancy seems like a good idea at the moment while we're making sure that everybody sees everything they need to for a hearing. So if at some point you want us to stop putting paper in front of you, just let our committee administrator know, and she will be happy to comply, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
Madam Chair, I misspoke myself earlier. It's only 25 cities, not 36.
Wow.
Consisting of Adrian, Baker City, Burns, Canyon City, Dayville, Granite, Greenhorn, Haines, Halfway, Hines, Huntington, John Day, Jordan Valley, Lone Rock, Long Creek Monument, Mount Vernon, Nyssa, Ontario, Prairie City, Richland, Seneca, Sumter, Unity, and Vail.
Sounds, Senator Ferrioli, with your musical talents, like you could set that list to music.
Madam Chair, it would be a tender mercy if I avoided that. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for that correction. Any other comments for today? Seeing nothing further to come before us, members, we are adjourned.